This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
We keep forgetting the power and the trust in the provider is probably one of the highest ones. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the provider. It could be someone representing the provider from their clinic. But again, just someone to say, it's safe, listen to the concerns. How are we addressing those concerns?
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I'm your host, Trevor Durin. And today's episode may sound like a rerun you've heard before, because this spring, we had the same two distinguished guests on to talk about the same topic, which is the evolving preferences of healthcare consumers. I asked Mark Larson, who's led a lot of this research for SG2 and now Vizient, on, as well as Dr. Tom Villanueva, who's an associate vice president of clinical resources and a practicing internal medicine physician, to come back on the podcast. Since their last episode, they've done two more in-depth consumer research studies, and we're starting to see some new patterns emerge, and we're starting to see health systems and physician practices evolve to meet these needs of the new healthcare consumers for 2020, and we think beyond. Welcome back, gentlemen. Happy to have you both.
Thank you, Trevor. Glad to be here again.
Trevor, a real pleasure. Thank you.
All right. You guys are pros, so I'm just going to jump right in. Mark, I'll start with you. What themes that jumped out to you that kind of help paint a picture of what the new healthcare consumer looks like?
What we've learned so much from COVID is the behaviors, they have changed, and folks have just basically been more aware of what can be done in the healthcare world that's different than traditional encounters with providers. There's really three things that we learned. First of all, around virtual visits, everybody realizes virtual visits really grew dramatically in May. And a lot of that was just because a lot of the practices were closed or consumers or patients didn't feel safe going into that environment.
Sure.
But we asked the questions in this most recent survey, what would they like to continue as consumers? What healthcare services would you like to have once COVID-19 abates? Remarkably, 88% of the consumers said that they would like virtual visits to continue. Now, you might say, well, of course, but not really. When we asked this question during a survey at SG2 at the end of 2019, that number was in the low 20%. So there's been a rapid awareness of what virtual visits can do for the consumer. Another thing that consumers really would like to see continued as well is some of the great development around virtual waiting rooms and actually not having to sit in a waiting room with other sick patients, or just from a convenience perspective, having the ability to wait until you're called, wait in your car, perhaps in the parking lot, and then come in for your face-to-face visit with the provider. That was really kind of number one. Number two was, and I thought this was some information that our clients can use out there. When you think about it, consumers, they're more likely actually to seek out a virtual visit with their existing provider. And this is interesting numbers. 94% would they rather have a virtual visit with an existing provider versus 68% with a provider that they aren't familiar with. Think about it. If your provider is supporting that, you're much more likely to take part in a virtual visit. And these numbers are really impressive and really goes back to the thing that we've been saying at SG2 for quite some time, that consumers really want the provider to take the lead. That's really important. And Tom, I don't know if you have a comment about that, what you've seen in your practice.
Yeah, Mark, I think it states more the importance, if ever, of number one, physician engagement, and also physician leadership on theirs. More than ever, we're hearing from our patients that they're willing to be part and participate in this virtual platform, but they want to see a familiar face, and who that provider is going to be important. We also have some data that suggests this has to do with even procedures that they want to hear about from their physicians if a procedure should be done, even if it's elective or for screening purposes. But now more than ever, our member clients need to seriously consider, what are you doing exactly to engage your physician and how you are using your physician leadership to do that?
That's great. That follows along too. And what we've learned, that bump in virtual visits, so much of that came, certainly the MD Lives and the other providers out there, their business grew as well. But a lot of those visits grew from traditional clinic settings that did shift rapidly over to virtual visits. The last point I wanted to make around our key learnings from this survey was, we asked folks, how safe did you or your family feel going into a skilled nursing facility? And that number was also really pretty low. Only 19% of consumers felt safe receiving care in a nursing home, but 90% of the consumers are likely to seek monitoring or other virtual follow-up in the home. shifting consumer behaviors around COVID, but thinking about how can you deliver care in home, especially as we're looking at a potential COVID resurgence here in the winter months. Some organizations have really adapted new offerings to deliver COVID care in the home for low acuity COVID patients. Some organizations we've spoken with are also delivering observation care at home for non-COVID patients. Dr. Villanueva, is that a logistics nightmare, or do you think it can be done?
Well, it could definitely be done, but it needs to be planned ahead of time. It's actually monitoring these patients to see if there's any change in symptomatology, say if their pulse oxes are indicating that they're desaturating in their oxygen, or maybe their vitals are becoming unstable, and then having a means to contact these patients and bring them into a higher level of care. We need to recognize the importance of actually using virtual care not only to monitor, but even more important for the purposes of triaging. Quite frankly, the greater portion of patients that have COVID-19 don't require hospitalization, but quite a few actually require some monitoring for the purposes of symptomatology, in which they may overutilize the emergency room secondary to the symptoms that can be handled easily, not only virtually, but with medications that are over the counter.
Mark, I'm going to kick a question back to you. You spend so much of your time talking to health system leadership teams. And what, just in the kind of the language they use talking about recovery and bouncing back of volumes, what I've heard is everyone talks about it comparing to pre-COVID volumes. Oh, we're back at 90% or so, which tells me the mindset is we're going to settle back in to the way business used to be. And I just heard from you three pretty drastic shifts in how consumers are thinking about how they're going to utilize healthcare services. So what have you heard from health systems about how they're incorporating these insights to change their business and adapt to the new healthcare consumer?
We just talked about the consumer's interest in virtual visits, but it's one thing that consumers are saying that, but there's really been a lot of challenges that we've heard from both SG2 and Vizient members across the continuum. And I think the first thing is just around telehealth adoption is that there's some pretty big headwinds from both a business perspective as well as a clinical perspective that we're being faced with. So some organizations, they're going gangbusters and they're going to say, well, the business model will work itself out. We're moving full bore on telehealth. But I think the majority of our clients, they're holding back. They're saying, you know, we're settling in at telehealth visits about 10 to maybe 20% of our overall, mostly primary care E&M visits and service line E&M visits. But there's some things that are holding us back a little bit. And I thought it'd be kind of interesting for Dr. Villanueva and I to go back and forth, since he's a practicing physician, to really give that physician perspective. The first barrier that we've been hearing is, if I move all my business over to virtual care, it will impact my ancillary revenue, certainly makes it more difficult for me to deliver those services. Dr. Villanueva, any perspective as a physician leader and someone that has to get up and work at a practice every day?
Sure. I can look at it in the clinical side and also in reference to the physician compensation side as well. We do see patients that, particularly established patients, that will prefer a virtual platform, but the goal really is not to leave home. If I'm looking to do ancillary or require ancillary services, there's a bit of resistance on that. And quite a few of them are actually seeking out opportunities that we're having these services offered at home, where many times there's not either the capacity to do so or actually a way of organizing to make that happen, or where I can even get those ancillary studies done within a reasonable amount of time. So that's actually been very difficult. The other one is actually in reference also to screening exams. Here's an example, say, for colonoscopies. Colonoscopies are still the standard of care for screening for colon cancer. Now, there are alternatives out there that you could use fecal stool samples. And even though they have high sensitivities, they still run the risk of not being as good as doing a colonoscopy. Unfortunately, right now, many of my patients are having issues with access to getting the colonoscopy within a reasonable amount of time, or in this case, they may not still not be willing to go in to get the procedure done. And it has a lot to do with whom can go with them. With many of these patients still seeking care, many of them tend to be elderly. Some have limitations with either functional capacity or mental capacity or cognitive capacity, in which family members or loved ones are going to be necessary. And with some of the restrictions that occur with that, they tend to be more hesitant. In addition to any type of elective procedure that requires an overnight stay, we see a lot of hesitancy among organizations that are not allowing a loved one to actually remain with them overnight. Those are just a few examples. Another one is when you're screening for patients coming to face-to-face, many of our organizations are using a survey to conduct with the patient prior to coming in which sometimes those survey questions may be just part of a chronic disease issue. Somebody with COPD or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is going to have a cough. And ergo, just by having a cough, off, they may just be precluded by coming in to see me on a face-to-face visit, in which time they might be just limited to that virtual visit. The last one I need to mention is the lack of availability of instruments that I could use to actually listen to patients' heart and lungs or examine other parts of their body that require a light that are limited by the patient's use of either their cell phones, which the camera might not be of good value, or the same thing with the lens with their laptop or iPad.
So when you think about it, for strategic leaders within the organization, they see virtual as something that consumers want. They want to transition. They feel there's headwinds around why you can't do diagnoses and certain E&M visits in a virtual setting, or at least over the long period of managing a chronic condition. How do you move through that? And is it about identifying which types of diagnoses can be done virtually? You talked about the triage process. Is it about having a triage process built into your practice and or your contacts? Center? I mean, where do you really move? Because we know this isn't going to happen all at once. It's going to be a transition. Any thought about how you move a practice forward in that regard so that we understand who can be done virtually? How do we build that into our process?
I think the answer is yes, and it's going to be requiring physician and or provider engagement in the sense that I will look on who is scheduled for the day or for the next coming days. If it's an established patient, say with multiple chronic diseases and just needs follow-up, well, that's actually a very good example where I could use a virtual platform to see those patients versus somebody who's new that comes in with a new problem. Obviously, they would require more of an evaluation to be person to person. Those visits might even not even require me. I can engage our APPs or even a pharmacist if you have one in the outpatient level as well, or even a dietitian. Sometimes it's more necessary than just me. Another way is of engaging my patients with chronic diseases where maybe they've not been following up as often as I'd like them to, or they may be out of control from their chronic diseases, but I just don't know it because I haven't seen them. So chronic disease management is another way that we could definitely leverage this virtual platform. And I actually think our patients would enjoy and accept that as well.
One of the last things that was really identified as a barrier around moving virtual forward is the changing business models and reimbursement. Folks that are heavily involved in value-based care models really seem to be leveraging telehealth considerably, and maybe even a greater percentage than those in fee-for-service. When we look at where reimbursement is today and from a practice level, is there an opportunity to overcome that? Can we do things more efficiently with virtual health, or is the reimbursement going to have to be there at pretty much the same level as face-to-face visits?
The answer is both, to be quite honest with you. You're right. It does make care more efficiently, but sometimes when you toss in the issues with still having to use your electronic medical record and the purposes of documentation, they can be a bit of a burden for the physician as well. In addition to, there's the question of productivity. Among our physicians that are proceduralists per se, yes, they welcome the opportunity to see someone virtually, but it doesn't often lead to a procedure. So are you using their time more efficiently, and is it leading to hitting their productivity thresholds by just having a virtual platform? These are questions we definitely need to address.
That's great. So lots to think about there, Trevor. As Dr. Villanueva mentioned, these are not things that can't be overcome. And certainly we've learned a lot in a very short period of time on how to adapt our practices.
Thanks. You guys just covered a lot of ground. One other question in your survey was around the emergency department. And what we've seen in terms of utilization data is most places, emergency room volumes are still down a little bit. Maybe it's back to 80, 85% of pre-COVID levels. It fluctuates a little, but that's around the numbers I've heard. And that seems to be matching what we're hearing from consumers in terms of their comfort level with that setting. Mark, I'll go to you first. Do we think that's a new trend, something that's only going to last for a little longer? We're getting better and better at making people feel more comfortable. Can now so much more care be done transactionally, virtually for lower acuity needs that those volumes are never coming back? What do you think?
Trevor, I mean, it's amazing. First of all, the resilience that health systems have had, the amazing work that they've done in really getting consumers back in the door to get the necessary care that they need has been remarkable. The one exception, though, as you point out, has been the emergency department. In our survey, when we asked the question, do you feel safe visiting the emergency department? It was 50% in July. That number only went up to 54% by September. What that tells me is that consumers are really making that determination determination of which sites are safe, and the emergency department is not one of them. We either have to do a better job of convincing that, or maybe really thinking about how are we treating COVID patients in the ED, and is there a better way to do that? I don't know what the answer is, Dr. Villanueva. I'd love to hear your perspective on that. There are options for safety, but a lot of them are very clinically based, and then to convince consumers and change their behaviors is a pretty big hurdle here.
Yeah, I'll answer your question with another question. Every time you go to the emergency room, what is the first thing you start thinking about? How long am I going to wait in that waiting room? And it's your waiting room that's actually terrifying your patients at this point, frankly. I practice out of the Miami-Dade area of Florida, in which time during our recent surge, I had to go out of my way and beg people to go to the emergency room. People who are having active strokes, someone who I thought was definitely having a DVT, real emergencies, in which time I literally had to beg them to go to the emergency room. And I preface again, what scared them the most? It's your waiting room. What are you doing to keep me safe in that waiting room? Are you allowing my family member to come back into the emergency room to be with me because I'm scared with this problem? So I think that that's actually the biggest issue to occur. During areas of surges and during the time of this recording, we're seeing in the country that there is another surge coming about, that many of our patients have realized that there are alternatives to care, particularly for true non-emergent issues, whether they be the urgent care centers, seeing their own private clinicians or providers. And then there is our payers. Many of our payers are actually incentivizing our patients to seek these lesser, higher levels of care, if you will, which I also believe is another reason that that's driving some of the volumes.
So Dr. Villanueva, I'm going to come right back to you then. We've just done a number of consumer surveys asking some of the same questions so we can track changes over time. And thank you both for sharing a lot of that. What are some other consumer questions that you'd like to know the answers to as you think strategically about changes that you can make in your practice or that health systems can make at the system level to try and both make patients feel more safe, but also continue to make it an efficient and effective environment?
So I think you should ask some specific questions in reference to what exactly is making them nervous about coming to the hospital. I brought in the example of the waiting room. Is it that they're not sure what cleaning procedures are you using? Is it that there needs to be a consistency on your communication style, making sure that there's no deviation on how your medical staff is using communications? I think those are the type of questions you need to ask. Are we asking them specifically about having loved ones join them while they're in the facilities? I know that there's obviously a infectious disease issue going on in prevention, but are we asking those kind of questions? Healthcare is personal. We always need to know that. And even among healthcare providers, it's personal. It's usually a calling that made you to do this. So there is an emotional component to this that always needs to be put as part of the equation.
We did ask a question about, do you feel provider outreach is something that would help to bring you into the organization? And over 60% of the consumers felt that if the provider actually outreached to them, they would feel confident in coming in and receiving in-person care. In this particular question, it was for colonoscopies, preventative screenings. We keep forgetting the power and the trust in the provider is probably one of the highest ones. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the provider. It could be someone representing the provider from their clinic. But again, just someone to say, it's safe, listen to the concerns, how are we addressing those concerns? But that outreach is key. And sometimes we still, and I overuse this term, the build it and they will come philosophy. Sometimes we still think that's appropriate. And with COVID, all the rules have changed. So that outreach is important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I just want to emphasize where if I look at opportunities, it's how are you engaging your physicians? How are you engaging all of your providers in your facility? How are you partnering up with them to make this process a lot easier?
And what I'm hearing is that virtual platform needs to be a two-way communication channel, right? Not just an opportunity for patients to see a physician, but a communication channel for patients to see a provider they trust, but also for providers to communicate back to patients. Thank you both for sharing both what you're seeing, what you're hearing, and what we learned from this consumer survey. Really appreciate your insights today.
Pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you, Trevor.
Thanks to our listeners for joining. Please don't hesitate to follow and subscribe so you can hear more SG2 Perspectives. Thanks. Stay safe.
This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast. And today, we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.